Welcome to episode 530 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games, and TVs?
Heck yeah.
We're talking about TVs tonight?
Well, I mean, that at bits. Also, we just talked about a new set of TVs from Vizio.
Yeah,
that's three episodes ago.
All right, So we're TV
geeks. I went back
geeks.
And looked at those notes. We also tend to talk about a lot of TVs at CES when there is a CES for us to go to.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that last week. There's...
Yeah, we didn't.
There's no CES to go to.
There's not.
There may be a virtual CES for us to go to, but none of us really know what that looks like yet.
Right. And one of the reasons I didn't talk about it last week, I didn't put it in the notes, was it doesn't directly impact our listeners at all. Right? It's not like they're going to CES. It's us. As long as we still get them the news, they don't care how we're doing it.
Yeah, I suppose so. But we usually do some sort of special episode, and you know, we'll have to pump in fake, like, I don't know, crowd noise behind us when we talk about the CES stuff, and we can have some cardboard cutouts of random jerks that are pulling their suitcases behind them on wheels and stuff like that.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Should totally do that.
Let's not do that.
Maybe not. For you audio listeners who can't hear me shaking my head side to side, no, we probably shouldn't do that. What we should do is get into the show. What I'd like to do at the top of the show is to talk about our listener feedback, but we don't have any this week. So if you want to talk to us about any of the things that we talk about tonight for next week, then you can shoot us an email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So, Richard, let's get into the news this week. You know, I think you were probably looking at the show notes and going, there's hardly anything here that's really for me. And is any of this like really that big a news? But for me, I was looking at the notes today and going, do I make one of these pieces of you know, do I make one of these stories featured? Because there's multiple stories here that I think are pretty big.
That you're really excited about.
Well, not necessarily really excited about. One of these, this first one, I am really excited about.
All right, let's dive in.
So, yeah, let's jump right in. So, we've known, I mean, well, basically forever, every year new TVs come out. And yet again, TCL is releasing updated models across the board. And today, on August 11th, they officially announced and released some of their new TVs. And today they were announcing the new TCL 5 series and the 6 series. Now, 5 series is like, that's getting fairly low end. So we're not really going to talk about that other than to say the 5 series, the 2020 5 series is better than the 2019 5 series. Not surprising, right? The same is true with the 6 series, but the 6 series is getting really, really interesting. So to give you a little bit of look into how this has shaped up over the last few years, I always like to go to CNET when it comes to getting reviews for TVs because, man, they know their stuff. They really, really know their stuff. David Katzmeyer over there is the main guy who's doing their TV reviews, and he goes into such crazy detail. Like, he's not going to miss anything. So he said for the last 2 years, he made the TCL 6 series the best TV for the money. The last 2 years, that's been the case for the TCL 6 series. If you're more familiar with like the Vizio line, the 6 series kind of slots a little bit in between the M series and the P series. It's kind of odd because like on a feature comparison, it's a little bit more on the P series side, but it costs less than the P series typically, but it costs more than the M series. So that's where we're at now. Again, similar thing here. The TCL 6 series this time around does cost more than the Vizio M series TVs that I was talking about just a few episodes ago. But with some similar features here. So the main thing that, well, the main things that are different this year is these are QLED panels, which they were last year also, but now the backlighting is mini LED. And I think they're the first TVs to be doing mini LED, or at least the first TVs to be doing it at this. Well, it's they're the first TVs in this price range to be doing mini LED background or backlighting. And the idea with mini LED backlighting is they can do even more discrete zones of local dimming. So way better contrast. I mean, it's still not an OLED like Richard's got at home, but the more zones of local dimming you can do, the better. So with the mini LEDs, it allows them to do more of them. And they're finally bringing that down into the more consumer budget friendly versions of their TVs. So last year's 8 series TVs had mini LED backlighting, and the 8 series is better than the 6 series. But in this case, while the 6 series is getting better in this one area, it's still not better than last year's 8 series. So some numbers here. Last year's 8 series TV, the biggest one, had 10,000 mini LEDs in it. And I missed a zero in my notes here, and had 1,000 local dimming zones.
Okay, that's a little more impressive. I was looking at the notes and thinking, that's not really that impressive that it has 100 local dimming zones, order of magnitude different.
Yeah.
Now, theoretical capability of mini LEDs, if I understand right, is that you could, again, in theory, have per pixel dimming zones. But I don't know that anybody's there yet.
Well, there's, on a 4K TV, there's how many pixels?
Yeah, no, I totally get that.
Isn't it like in the millions?
Yeah. No, it is. But that is, I mean, that is the promise of this technology. It's that you get that lighting separate from the color rendering. And there are some potential advantages of that over something like OLED.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. We're still years away from having millions upon millions back there. But yeah, that'd be cool. So like I said, last year's biggest, so that was probably a 75-inch or maybe an 85-inch. 8 series had 10,000 mini LEDs and 1,000 local dimming zones. For comparison, the biggest TV in the 6 series line this year is a 75-inch, and it has 240 zones, not 1,000. And it has, I thought I wrote this number down. I think this year it has like 1,000 mini LEDs. So it's a lot less, but it's still really good.
Yep.
In theory, we don't have reviews on these TVs yet, so we don't know for sure, but it should be pretty good. For your HDR needs, they support Dolby Vision, HDR10, and HLG. They've got EARC. And then the stuff that gets me really like all of that is exciting. But the other thing that's exciting about this for me, and not so much for Richard, is these are 120 Hertz displays with variable refresh rate. And when I say variable refresh rate, I mean the VRR by the HDMI spec. So
that's oddly, really important for soap opera mode.
Well, VRR is not important for soap opera mode. 120 Hertz is if you want that. But no, the variable refresh rate is important for gaming. So it means that if your game is not, so like, let's say you've got a traditional 60 Hertz display and the game that you're playing can't render at 60 frames per second, you get screen tearing because it can't render the frame at the same rate that your TV is refreshing. So variable refresh rate says, oh, well, I'll just make the TV display the frames whenever they come in. And then there's no screen tearing. So it looks way better. And this has a range of 48 frames per second up to 120. So that's awesome, especially because the forthcoming Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5 both support up to 120 frames per second of output. So That's really, really great. Now, weirdly, it doesn't support G-Sync or FreeSync. Like, I kind of expected it not to support NVIDIA's G-Sync variable refresh rate technology because you have to pay licensing to NVIDIA and all of that. But AMD FreeSync is an open standard. I don't think they even need to pay licensing for that. So if you're a PC gamer, this might not be a good TV for you to be hooking your PC up to.
Right.
But for your consoles, it's going to be great.
Right. I'm not surprised. Is that even common on TVs, or is that more common on desktop monitors that are designed specifically for PCs?
You're suspecting absolutely correctly. There are almost no TVs out there that have FreeSync and practically none that have G-Sync, with a few exceptions. Like, Asus makes a 65-inch, essentially gaming monitor that does G-Sync. It's also $3,500. So that's the difference there. I think it's also 144 hertz, which is more common in the high-end gaming monitors. So it also has this new standard that we talked about when we mentioned the Vizio TVs, I believe. It has this THX certified game mode. I feel like I need a little TM, like in air quotes. I don't know how you do this over audio. A little trademark symbol at the end of that. There you go. It is THX certifying TVs to support, you know, really, really low input lag and auto low latency mode. You know, all of these types of things that gamers are looking for. But we don't have any actual specs yet on like what the input lag is going to be. It's always going to be different based on, you know, what resolution, what frames per second, do you have HDR enabled, all that sort of stuff. You know, to give you a little bit of an example on that, I looked up my TV. I've got a 2016 Vizio M series 4K TV. The input range, the input lag is anywhere from, at least with 4K, anywhere from like 39 milliseconds up to like 120 milliseconds. All of that is crazy high. Whereas last year's TCL 6 series at 4K can get down to like 11 milliseconds, which is, that's getting more into the sweet spot. Now, the gaming monitors that you can buy, like this gaming monitor that I have on my computer, it's 5 milliseconds. So that's kind of what you're looking at. But I don't think most humans are going to notice the difference between 5 and 11 milliseconds, right? So in terms of pricing, that's the other exciting thing about this. The 55-inch, which has 128 zones of local dimming, available right now on Amazon for $650. The 65-inch has 160 zones of local dimming. It's $900. The 75-inch has 240 zones, and that's $1,400. So all of these sound really good. I'm, of course, going to wait to see what David Katzmeyer over at CNET has to say about these. But I'm already talking to Jen about, you know, can we replace our TV with one of these? I really want a new TV.
And also, aren't all of these TCL TVs basically Roku on board?
Yes, they do have Roku on board. I probably should have mentioned that, but yeah, if you're looking for, you know, a TV just to put somewhere without anything else hooked up to it, you've got Roku on board, and the experience works really well. So I do have to tell you a quick, very quick little side story. I was talking to Jen about these tonight over dinner and trying to get her permission to buy one, and she's like, "So why do you want a new TV?" And I said, "We actually did talk about this like a month ago," and she goes, "Oh, so like these TVs have better video cards in them or something like that." And I said, "You're on the right idea. You just used all the wrong words." Yes. So hopefully something like this in my future with with the new Xbox coming soon.
How big?
Oh, I would still just do a 55.
What?
My living room is not that big.
You wouldn't push it one size higher?
I don't, that,
oh,
Well, so the conversation went on to, so we've got this house project we want to do and this house project we want to do and that one, and oh, I need to do this too. If we can do all of those and there's money left over for a TV, then sure. So I don't know that there's going to be enough. I guess it depends on how, if we actually get another stimulus check.
Okay. Which we'll use on our TV. All right. You know, that's the beauty of untaxed money.
Right. Exactly. All right. So let's move on from hardware, kind of, not really, onto another physical sort of thing story, but much smaller physical things. Richard, some rumors here that I think you're going to be sad about, potentially. I'm really not sure how you're going to feel about this. So
yeah,
some rumors that Disney is with just a few exceptions on basically going to stop making 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray disc for catalog titles. So this is older movies from Disney, from 20th Century Fox, which I guess isn't 20th Century Fox anymore. It's 20th TV, which is weird. How do you feel about this? Like, you're huge into Disney.
Right.
And you're really big in Ultra HD Blu-ray.
I am.
Are you sad about this?
I'm a little less concerned about catalog titles. And I tend to think that this is probably getting a little bit blown out of proportion. So as I understand it, this was originally reported over on the Digital Bits. And if you're not familiar with that, that's a site I have literally followed for, not literally followed, I have literally read for over a dozen years now about basically DVD technology and Blu-ray technology. And they have just been on top of it as this space has evolved. And so they reported some rumors and presumably had some verification of these claims that catalog titles, specifically of live action films, are likely not to get 5K releases.
And 4K.
4K, 4K, 5K. I don't know where that came out. 4K releases. And okay. I mean, unless it's something really amazing, like something that should have had a 4K release and didn't, I might get a little bit concerned about that. I'm trying to think of a Disney catalog title that falls into that category. Now, one Fox movie title that falls into that category is The Abyss, and I'm going to be very unhappy if that never sees a 4K release, because it still has never seen a Blu-ray release.
Whoa. Really?
Really.
Wow.
Yeah.
That movie was, in terms of special effects, absolutely amazing.
It was. It was.
Oh, so this article does say there are apparently some exceptions to these plans, however.
Of course there are.
Including James Cameron's Avatar and possibly several of his older films. Like True Lies and The Abyss.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to be very happy about True Lies too, because that's another one that does not yet have a Blu-ray release. And that's just astounding, because these are two very, very popular films that hold up incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Then I don't feel so bad about it. Yeah. You know, I'm not too worried about this. And I think the justification is that for the most part, people are watching these titles now. They have access to these titles now on streaming services. And on those streaming services, they may actually get 4K treatment. They may get restored and presented in 4K, even if those 4K versions of the films don't go to physical media. I'm okay.
If they're going to do all the work to make it 4K, why not put out a disc?
Right. So that suggests that there's some cost benefit analysis going on, and that there's perhaps not enough demand to make it worth the creation and distribution and retailing and all of that of these physical media objects. Now, if they start doing this with new titles, then I'm going to be pissed.
And it doesn't sound like that's in the cards.
Yeah. Yet. It will come. The day will come. But I don't think that that's going to be happening soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were going to be like, you know what? I'm fine with this because
yeah,
I don't need more disc.
Oh, no. I totally need more discs. No, don't. I mean, I'm not giving up on the physical media.
Okay. All right. So should we get back into some more gaming news?
Oh, please. Let's do that.
I am going to be curious for your take on some of this. So I'm going to do these in a little bit reverse order of kind of how I've got this laid out here for you, Richard, to kind of prepare you. So there were a couple of announcements today, and it started off kind of weird because today and a little bit yesterday, a lot of video game studios started announcing delays for their games. You know, a bunch of games that were supposed to come out this year getting delayed to next year. And it's not super surprising. You know, the main reason that everybody's talking about is COVID. Of course, it's COVID. Everybody had to switch to work from home. It slowed them down. They're not going to be able to hit the holiday 2020 release dates.
Right.
Makes sense. Today, 343 Industries, you know, the company that makes Halo, did the same thing. At 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern, they put out a release saying, basically, sorry, but COVID means this game, this next game, it's a little tiny indie title called Halo Infinite, which was supposed to be like the main console exclusive launching with the Xbox Series X, getting delayed to 2021. Kind of a big deal. Kind of a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't normally be talking about game delays at all on this show. We don't talk about that sort of thing. We don't care that much. But that means that there are no major exclusives.
Okay, wait. Let me count
with the
these.
Xbox Series X.
Zero. Okay, that's it. That's all we have. Zero.
Yeah. I mean, there are console exclusives. There are games that are launching, but none of them are huge, huge games. You know, like PlayStation, they're releasing a new Spider-Man game with Miles Morales. That's a big deal. The Xbox was firmly tethered to Halo, and no Halo at launch. No Halo at launch. No Forza at launch. Eesh.
How many times do you think expletives were shouted in the meeting where they came to this revelation? I mean, I can't imagine that this went down easily.
No, no, this had to have been pretty rough.
Because this is potentially, I doubt it's a generation loser guaranteed, but they'll lose out of the gate for sure.
Maybe. I'm trying not to be that pessimistic about it, but maybe. Like, PlayStation does have the Spider-Man game, but the Spider-Man game, it's not like some brand new thing. They're basically like, it's more like an expansion.
Okay, except that
Spider-Man
people
game.
Freaking went out of their minds with how cool that game was.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was a really, really great game. But the other thing that Microsoft has going for them with Xbox, and I really need to use different language there because it's so many things. They have Game Pass, which is huge. You know, you give them your $10 or your $15 for Ultimate, and you immediately have access to a library of over 100 games that you can play on this thing. You can play basically any game that was released on Xbox One. You can play a whole bunch of games that were, you know, hundreds of games that were on Xbox 360. Some games that were on the original Xbox. Now, do you want to play a bunch of super old games? No. But there are current Xbox One games that you will still want to play on your Xbox Series X. And a bunch of them are going to be Xbox Series X enhanced. So they will look better. They'll run better. And then, of course, you've got the other console-specific features like insanely fast load times, ray tracing for the, I mean, that's really more for the new games, but and just higher frame rates across the board on any game that is Xbox Series X enhanced. So they do have things going for them that Sony doesn't. We talked last week about the controller situation. If you already have a bunch of Xbox One controllers, they'll just work with the Xbox Series X. Like, that's not a small deal. When you buy a new console, especially if you've got more than just you in your house that's playing video games, you have to think, all right, so it's $500 for the console. I've got two other people in my house that play, so I'm going to need to buy two more controllers at $60 a pop, plus a couple of games at $60 a pop. Like, that all really adds up.
Yeah, but it's Christmas.
Yes, right, the time of year where we just max out our credit cards and deal with it in the spring. Right. Don't do that, people. So all of that does matter. And the Xbox does look like it's going to be the more powerful device. And that does matter. That is one of the reasons that Sony got a jump on Xbox with the PS4, because everyone knew that the PS4 was a little bit more powerful. And it sounds like this time around, the Xbox Series X is going to be not just a little bit more powerful, but significantly more powerful than the PlayStation 5. So that should bring some gamers along over to the green side from the blue side. But I don't know. This is definitely not good, but I'm not ready to say that it like dooms them out of the gate just yet.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see how this goes. I'm frankly surprised that they had only one thing in the hopper. Like,
well, it's only one huge one.
Okay.
And Sony really only has one huge one too. And that's not that uncommon.
Yeah,
there's usually only a couple, and then a lot of smaller games. And then you do have all of the third party games. Like, there's going to be big deal games to play. Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Dirt 5 is going to be kind of a big deal. Watchdog Legion is going to be kind of a big deal. And they even have other exclusives coming out, like Gears Tactics, another game in the Gears of War franchise is coming out this fall. It's just not like it's a strategy game. It's not a traditional Gears game. So it's not at that same level that Halo Infinite would have been at. So they've got stuff. You're not going to have a shortage of things to play on this new hardware, but it definitely makes me wonder how many people are going to be rushing out to buy these new consoles when there isn't this giant wealth of brand new exclusive things to play on these things.
Yeah.
So we'll see. The other thing that we do know that it was like Microsoft was like, is there anything that we can do to try and, I don't know, get people excited to not focus so much on the loss of Halo here? And they were like, I got it. Let's tell them the month the Xbox is coming out. That'll be great. It's coming out in November. Great. We knew that. Like, they always come out in November.
Surprise!
Right. Always. There's never been an Xbox that didn't release in November. The Switch is the only thing that doesn't come out in November. So that's not really a surprise.
And even that is going to look different. Like, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they launch online before they launch in physical retail.
Mm-hmm.
Because stores do not want huge lines of people gathering to wait for this thing.
Right. I think it's also possible that they release earlier in November, like at the very beginning of November, to give a little bit more space between when it launches and Black Friday.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah, I could see that. Even Black Friday is going to be very different this year.
Yeah.
Their stores have already announced that they're not going to be open on Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That is definitely different.
Yep.
Yeah. How do you do Black Friday when you like limit the number of people in stores and stuff?
Exactly.
That's weird.
It's going to be really weird.
Yeah. Fortunately, not a thing I normally do, so it doesn't impact me at all.
Right.
All right. Just a couple of quick ones. We've been talking a lot over the last couple of episodes about Game Pass Ultimate and the Project X Cloud stuff. We mentioned last week that Project X Cloud and whatever the heck they're actually going to call it, officially launches September 15th. Well, they decided to give all Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscribers early access, essentially. It's still a beta, early beta access to the platform through the Android Game Pass beta app. So if you have the Game Pass beta app on your Android phone, you can try this out as long as you're currently an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscriber. Now, it's not the full thing. They've got about 30 games in there. It's not the 100-ish games that they're going to be launching with, but they've updated the app. They've now got like basically three category options for what games you want to be looking at. They've always had console and PC. Now, the first option in the list is cloud. If you select cloud, it gives you all of the games that you can stream right through your phone. Those console and PC options just allow you to view what's available on console and PC. And then if you pick one of those console games, you can do remote installation to your Xbox from the mobile app. So that's all there now. I was playing with that a little bit today just to see if it was actually working and all that stuff. Notice that the controller actually works within the app. So like if you turn on your controller and load up the app, you can use the D-pad to arrow around and stuff inside of the app. And the thing that I've been wondering about over the last few days with Game Pass and with Project X Cloud and this game streaming being so heavily focused on Android, because as we talked about last week, Apple just doesn't want to play ball. Will they release this functionality on Android TV? It's an interesting idea because it, you know, for anybody who has an Android TV, it's an awesome plan. But if they do it, does it cannibalize Xbox console sales? I don't think it does, except if Microsoft decides to release a lower powered Xbox that would be a lower cost Xbox, which there have been rumors about for a while. They've been calling it Project Lockhart is the code name. And we've been hearing it would be called the Xbox Series S. And now we can be reasonably certain that Series S is a thing and that it is actually going to be called that, because some people were able to somehow buy a next gen Xbox controller, and right on the packaging, it says that it supports Xbox Series X and Series S. So I guess it's real. Like, unless this packaging is not legit and they've decided we're not actually doing this thing after they put all of this packaging and branding and all that stuff together, it sure sounds like they spoiled the surprise.
Yeah, this is really weird. I don't know how I feel about this. I'm still hung up on, as I see these two series names together, how much I hate this naming.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
But, I mean, getting back to that cannibalization concept, I have a question. To use any of those features, to use those basically streaming or cloud gaming capabilities, do you have to actually have a console? Like, nope. Does that have to be about a part of the equation at all?
Nope. No, you don't need a box at all, because it's basically connecting to an Xbox in the cloud.
But it's not even a requirement for signing up.
Nope.
Interesting.
No, you can go to the Xbox website, get your Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription right in your browser, log into your Microsoft account on your phone, and get going. No Xbox required.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is part of Apple's beef with all of this. I really don't want to get back into all of that argument again, but there's been plenty of articles since we last recorded last week. About all of that.
We did not argue about it. Apple's right.
No, they're not. They're jerks. That's what they are. Okay, so that's it for our news for the week. So, Richard, it's only been a week since we last recorded, so you don't have nearly as long of a list as you regularly do. So what's been going on in your entertainment center?
This is true, and my TV watching experiences have been very focused. So first off, I finished my UHD backup effort now that I got my UHD drive working again. So now I am spending a little bit of time like going through old stuff. I have numerous places where video content is stored, and I'm just trying to optimize that and make sure that I have everything available in Plex and blah, blah, blah. But as far as what I am watching, I have been keeping up with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I feel like the penultimate episode before the finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't live up to the whole rest of the season. So I hope the finale, 2-hour finale, does not disappoint this week. We shall find out soon enough. Continuing to watch through Archer season 7, I finished the 5th season of House of Cards, and I am now in the final 6th season of House of Cards. That started off kind of slow, but it is getting better as I'm getting into it. And then I am watching, actually, this was a fun one. We were just trying to figure out what to watch one evening this weekend, flipping through TV stations and flipping through video services. We're like, oh, look. Oh, HBO Max has all the new Doctor Who episodes. And we decided to restart from the beginning of the new Doctor Who episodes. So we started rewatching those. And I mean, I vaguely remember some of it, but it's really fun because there's a lot of it that I don't remember. So I'm enjoying that a lot. And then, and this is like the best thing that happened TV-wise all week. My guilty pleasure, the show that I enjoy and have to admit that I enjoy watching once every year, Big Brother, is back on. Yep, GP3 in the chat guessed it.
How? How?
So they did two very, well, I mean, they did a couple of very smart things. First off, no studio audience. So live shows, just Julie. So, secondly, it's an All-Stars episode. So everyone that's on has already been on the show already. So they know how this all plays out. So that makes it easier for everyone. And finally, everyone was quarantined separately before they started the show for 2 weeks. And everybody was tested during the quarantine period, and then they were all brought together and brought into the house together.
And in Big Brother, they don't let anybody leave the house?
And in Big Brother, you cannot leave. Like, that's the whole thing.
So they're not, like, going on romantic trips and stuff like that?
No, they are stuck in there for 3 months together.
Oh, my. That sounds terrible.
That is why it gets so good. It just really pushes everybody's emotions to the brink.
Yeah, as we're all experiencing in reality nowadays.
Yeah. So I didn't even know this was coming on. And last week, right after we recorded, I went to go watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because that had been recording. And I noticed that Big Brother had already recorded. And I just had the biggest friggin' smile on my face the whole time I was watching it. I'm like, ah, finally, a sense of normalcy. How crazy is that? Big Brother is what's grounding me right now. And then finally, we watched one movie. We watched the free movie on HBO Max, Scoob. This is an animated series, or not series, but an animated story of the Scooby-Doo bunch. It's kind of an origin story, if you will, which is interesting because I'm not aware that they ever really did that. And they brought in a bunch of different characters, which is kind of fun. This was terrible. I mean, it had moments, but it was just really, really terrible. And the actors made little to no effort to sound like the original characters.
Yeah, that sounds awful. I can't believe you watched it.
I was very I had high hopes. I'm like, I liked the Scooby-Doo movies, the live action ones. I've liked the animated Scooby-Doo movies that they've done. I loved Scooby-Doo as a kid. I loved all the knockoffs like Captain Caveman and all those other crazy characters. But no, this was just bad. It was really bad.
So let's see what Rotten Tomatoes has to say about this. 48. That's higher than I expected.
That's actually the critic score, not the viewer score.
The tomato meter is 48. The audience score is 57.
Yeah, it's much worse than that. I mean, these are my opinions, but whatever.
Yeah, if you think it's worse than that, it must be really bad.
All right, Josh, that is what I've been up to in my entertainment center. How about you?
Okay, I did actually watch something on my TV this week. I know that's kind of surprising. Occasionally, I watched Logan. You were talking about the most recent, I don't even know if it was the most recent one, but you watched an X-Men movie recently. And I was like, yeah, I need to get on those. Like, I'm the huge X-Men fan here, and I haven't even seen them all. And Logan was supposed to be like the best one, and I've never seen it all the way through. So I was like, all right, let's watch it. I know someone who has it on their Plex server. It may or may not be someone that I co-host a podcast with. So let's give this a shot. And said Plex host person even has it in 4K. And I thought, this is great. It'll be awesome. I love watching movies in 4K. That didn't work out so well. Said co-host, I mean, Plex streamer's server or something, or maybe his internet connection, was not up to the task of streaming a 4K movie to me on my Plex server.
Said co-host's server may be set to not permit more than HD outside of the network.
Well, then shouldn't my client have figured that out? Like, I don't know what's going on, but it worked for a little while. And then it just kind of died and went to endless buffering. And
well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, fortunately, I've got access to someone else's Plex server who also has the movie. And they also have it in 4K. And it worked fine. I didn't check to see if they have it in 4K in like a different video codec or something like that. Hmm. Like maybe it's already a more optimized for streaming type codec or something like that. Yeah, maybe a lower bit rate. I'm not sure. But either way, I ended up getting to watch all of Logan. I remembered very little about what any of the things that I had heard about that movie. So I was kind of going into this movie blind, other than the fact that I knew it was rated R. And I actually have watched like the first 20 minutes once before.
Okay.
So I knew that it opened with him with Wolverine basically murdering a bunch of dudes who were trying to steal his car. But I still was not expecting how violent that movie was. It was so violent. And I can deal with violent movies. It's not like I'm like, oh, I just can't watch this. But the thing that was weird for me with it was that there is a like 11-year-old kid who is also doing all of these crazy violent things. When there is an 11-year-old kid who is murdering dudes left and right, that's a little weird. And to think that, you know, I don't know how old the actress was who played that role, but to have a fairly young kid play that role also seems kind of weird.
How Tarantino?
I guess Tarantino.
It just seemed like it was it just seemed like it was really, really pushing comfort limits. And
yeah.
And almost doing it, and I doubt that this is the case, but it almost felt like it was doing it to see what they could get away, like how far they could go. But what's your overall impression? Because a lot of people think that, not to sound like someone who just says hyperbole all the time, but a lot of people are saying that this was the best of the X-Men films. A lot of people say that.
And But when you look at the catalog of X-Men films, it's not a very high bar, right? and I love X-Men, and I do like the movies, but I also love Fast and the Furious movies. So my bar isn't very high. But it was an interesting movie, and I think that, like, the violence, I wouldn't say it was Quentin Tarantino levels of violence, because yes, it's super violent, but it wasn't ridiculous. Like, when I think of violence in Tarantino movies, I think of Kill Bill, and it's like, I'm going to cut someone's arm off and 30 gallons of blood are going to shoot out of the hole. Like, it wasn't like that, but it was very, you know, they didn't hide anything. And the thing that I walked away from that movie thinking was, if X-Men, like, if it was real, this is kind of how it would play out in the real world. Like, if people had these types of abilities, this is what it would look like. Like, there would be villains, and stuff like that, who would use these to kill lots of people.
Yep.
So I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit too cynical for what this world is nowadays, but it did seem somewhat more realistic than most regular X-Men movies, and less, and certainly less sugar-coated. But is it the best one? Maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. I really liked First Class.
I thought First Class was very good. And frankly, I think, and I may be a little bit biased here, but I think both Wolverine Origins and The Wolverine were both better than Logan.
So I haven't seen those either. I have so many X-Men movies.
I thought the stories in them were much. I mean, one obviously being the origin story, but I just thought both of those stories were much better stories overall.
Yeah, and it's definitely sad, but sad to the point of just being depressing. I didn't need it to be as depressing as it was. So I don't know.
I can understand that in this time.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it for what I watched. I mentioned last week that I'd started reading Wolves of the Kala, book 5 in the Stephen King Dark Tower series. Still working on that. Made a lot of progress. I think I've got, 11 or 12-ish hours remaining in that. So not a ton. Might have it done by next week. Jen really wants me to have it done so I can get back to the books that she wanted me to read. In terms of video games, played some NHL, of course. Played a little bit of Call of Duty, especially since they had free multiplayer weekend, so all of my friends were able to play multiplayer with me that haven't purchased the full game. And then I did watch some hockey, but that got real depressing too, because my Penguins lost on Friday, and they're now out. They technically didn't make the playoffs, because that wasn't technically even the playoffs. It was a play-in series to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and they don't get much opportunity to, like, show their stuff this year.
No, they don't. It was bad.
All right.
Yeah, that made Friday really suck. I don't know why, but they lost in the first round last year too, and this felt worse. This felt a lot worse. I don't know. It wasn't great. So yeah, so I had depressing Friday watching my hockey team lose, and then depressing Saturday watching Logan. I don't know what sort of decisions I'm making with my life, Richard, but I'm not sure that they're the right ones.
If this is what sports does to people, I really don't understand people's obsession with sports. I really just don't.
Because of the emotions. When it's high, it's really high. It's great, right? I mean, my team has won 3 Stanley Cups in the last 11 years, and those moments have been amazing.
Okay.
That's why. And one of the college football teams I love has won, 157 national championships in the last 15 years. So,
right. Well, my college football team just made the right decision to stand down next year.
Yeah, the whole conference did. Yep. It wasn't just your team.
Well, no, but I mean, they were part of the conference, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Big Ten, right. Okay, well, that's it for what I've been watching and reading and playing. So that's it for what's going on in this whole show. So if you want to get a hold of us, leave us some feedback, you can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at Digimedia Zone. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. All the links for that stuff is over in the show notes at thedigitalmediazone.com. While you're at the site, you can check out the other podcast we have. It's Richard's other podcast. Well, one of his other podcasts, and it's called Home On. It is a show about smart home technology from more of the DIY perspective. What's the latest with Home On?
So we're still running the episode where I got together with YouTuber HomeKit Geek. That was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed doing that episode. I am still working on lining some folks up. I have nothing in the hopper yet, but I will let folks know as soon as there's something new planned.
Cool. And we are continuing to do this show live over on Twitch now. So you can, of course, follow us on Twitter to know when the show is going to be live, or you can go and subscribe to us on Twitch and then it'll notify you also. But we typically do this show Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And when things go well with the video recording and all of that, then I do try and get the video up on YouTube as well. You can find the link to our YouTube channel also at the website. So that's going to do it for episode 530. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.